friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, Voice of America listeners. I'm Muck Bill Yabaro, filling in for Sunny Young. Today's show will be filled with NBA banter with sportscaster Qasem Ibrahim. We'll also have some tennis action with the men's Davis Cup from Spain and the parole of double amputee Olympic runner Oscar Pistorius. Let's get into the November 24th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Starting off the show with everything NBA, I spoke with sports podcaster Qasem Ibrahim about who he thinks are the hottest teams in the NBA, his thoughts on the new in-season tournament, and how some huge trades have shaken up the league already. Let's take a listen.
We are going to jump right into it. NBA news, you know, NBA action. NBA has been super exciting this season already. What teams look the best in your eyes already starting it off?
You know, I feel like there's teams that I think are that look good right now, but they can be a lot better. For example, the Milwaukee Bucks. I think Damian Lillard, like as the season progresses, Damian Lillard and Giannis, that tandem, they'll become like even more in sync with each other and with the rest of the team. I think that's going to be a very dangerous thing to watch just because of Lillard's game and his closing ability. And Giannis, you know, Giannis is just bully ball, you know, hard to stop him. So I think this is a perfect like tandem that it's going to be hard to stop, you know, later on in the year.
Absolutely. No, I like that pick. I love the way that you segued right into that. So let's get right to it then. Dame Lillard makes his way over to Milwaukee to become paired up with Giannis and Chris Middleton. But in turn, Drew Holiday gets shifted over to the Boston Celtics. Now, the two teams just played the other night, and Boston got the better of Milwaukee. What are your thoughts on who do you think won if you have to choose an organization in that trade dynamic? Obviously, Dame came from Portland, so it's not like it was a direct trade, but, you know, they worked it around. So who looks better in your eyes now, the Boston Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks?
That's actually a very good question. I can't forget about Boston. I think that within that trade, getting Drew Holiday helps them tremendously on the defensive side, you know, in the backcourt. But not only that, you can't forget about Porzingis too. Them getting Porzingis, I think, was such a huge win for them. I was sad about Porzingis, you know, of course, being a Wizards fan, you know, local sports team fanatic. I was disappointed in it, but I understand why they did it. You know, because the Wizards are a rebuilding team. But them getting Porzingis, I think, on top of that, with the Drew Holiday they trade, they probably potentially are the winners of that deal, you know. Still can be, though, as well. The only reason why I'm getting Milwaukee that slight edge is because it's just as Giannis, you know. Giannis is Giannis, and you know what he's going to bring to the table all the time.
I see where you're going with it. So for you at the moment, the Bucks are the team to beat in the East. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Bucks.
Okay.
Boston for a second.
Okay. I like it. You know, I personally feel as though the upside of that team, I think, is the best in the East. Like we said, having Giannis and Dame Lillard is an amazing match, you know, but I think they're going to need some time to kind of work together. So let's talk about this in-season tournament. What are your thoughts on this tournament in general?
As this play-in tournament and, like, you know, in the future seasons, I think they're going to add more, what I feel like would be more incentives, like to incentivize the players even more to play. Like, for example, I think what they should add to, by the way, as far as incentives is, maybe the winning team of that tournament gets, let's say, like home court advantage throughout the playoffs, or gets to, let's say, pick their first round opponent. You know, I think there'll be certain things like that, those incentives. I think it'll just up this tournament and make it even more like in the future. Because I was negative at first about it. I was like, why are they adding this? It's so unnecessary. But I could see this working, especially in the future seasons, when they add more incentives, you know, to incentivize these players and get certain advantages, let's say, during the playoffs and stuff. And I think that's what incentivizes the players more than the money. you know, because they want to get to the championship at the end of the day.
Now, what I would suggest is, you know, if the commissioner is listening, I think even better than this in-season tournament would be something along the lines where, let's say, the first place teams on either side, East Coast and the West Coast, end up getting first round byes, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the playoffs. I think that would be huge, because what that would then do is your incentive for getting that record is not just, hey, I'm going to play the eighth seed. It should be number one ranks. They're going to get the automatic bye, or second is going to play the eighth, and then so on and so forth. So I think it would be exciting, you know, if something like that were to happen. But this is, like you say, this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. Question now for you. James Harden leaves Philadelphia for the sunshine state of California. He is an L.A. boy, so now he is with some of his L.A. guys in Los Angeles as a Clipper. What are your thoughts on him so far, and do you think this can work in the long term, at least for this season?
At least for this season, that's a great question, because the Clippers with head coach Tyronn Lue, I think out of all the coaches, Tyronn Lue is someone that could make something like this work with James Harden and the current team. But at the same time, I'm really confused on their identity. Like, I feel like right now with James Harden there, like, what is their they're still trying to figure that out, their true identity of that team. Because right now it's like they're not really playing a certain style. It's just like three stars on the team and just go run it, you know? Not really much play calling, you know, Harden with his one-on-one basketball, you know? But as far as it going to work, I just know that Kawhi is going to be stressed a lot throughout the season.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. Last question before we go. Rookie of the year, Wemby or Chet Holmgren? Or could it be someone else? What are your thoughts?
That's actually, I like this question, because I'm on that Chet Holmgren train right now, and that young team at OKC with his squad right now. I think because of his team and how they're playing, he will be the title or the Rookie of the Year award. Mm-hmm. Versus Wembanyama. But, you know, Wembanyama has a good that name. So because if it's like a tight race, it's going to go Wembanyama. But I like the way Chet is playing right now. He's really nice. What do you think about the between those two guys, though, as well?
Yeah, no. If I were just to, you know, just jump on the wagon right there as well. I think to me, Chet seems like he's more complete right now. But that could just be because he has the ability to be on a team that has an automatic scorer in SGA already, who's an all-star. So when you have the luxury of not being the focal point, you can shine, you know. But Wemby doesn't have that luxury, because Wemby is the focal point against everybody that he plays. So I think, you know, Wemby is already showing, you know, the flashes of what we are expecting from him, and so is Chet. I think it's going to be a long race. I just hope that both of these young men can stay healthy, because their frames are relatively similar in that they're long, lengthy, thin, but they're also like agile type of, you know, they play this unique hybrid basketball. But I saw, you know, Wemby get crossed up a couple times. I've seen Chet get as well, so hopefully they can stay injury free, because it's never nice to see a 7-plus footer, you know, on the floor like that.
Yeah, I like that question about that. What I like about that question is because the NBA, what it shows me is the NBA is in good hands. Like, with the big men right now, as being the discussion as Rookie of the Year, is great. Usually we hear, oh, the guards, you know, right, because they're like, you know, the offensive game, you know, we're just used to that, seeing the guard, right, and rookie, the focal points. But I like it now, you know, we're going back. You know,
I feel like we're, you know, it's somewhat like fashion, right? It's just this mm-hmm. big cycle that continually keeps changing. But the bigs of this era are just so talented that they have an ability to do so many different things, which is amazing. But
yeah,
awesome, man. It's been a pleasure. Definitely, we could talk for another hour. I will have you back on another segment of the Sunny Side of Sports. Definitely appreciate you for being on the show with me today, my man.
Hey, man, thank you very much, bro. I appreciate you for having me, and you know it.
Heading over to South Africa, double amputee Olympic runner Oscar Pistorius was granted parole Friday, 10 years after shooting his girlfriend at his home in South Africa in a killing that shocked the world. South African Correctional Services spokesperson Singbako Nxumal said Pistorius would be released from prison in January. Pistorius has been in jail since late 2014 for the killing of his girlfriend and model Reeva Steenkamp in February 2013. He was convicted of murder and sentenced to 13 years and 5 months in prison. Pistorius testified he thought there was a burglar in the bathroom and fired through a closed door, accidentally killing Steenkamp. Pistorius won several sprinting medals at the Paralympics in 2012, became the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics. He was at the height of his fame as a sprinter and one of the world's most admired athletes when he killed Steenkamp. Now on to some lighter news. In African women's volleyball, Kenya won its record 10th continental title in August in Yaoundé, Cameroon. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2023, Mokin Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of fans applaud in Yaoundé as the national women's volleyball team of Kenya lifts gold for the 10th time as women's African volleyball champions. Kenya thrashed Egypt 3-0 to lift the trophy. Kenya women's volleyball coach Paul Bitok says hard work pays off and he is proud of his team.
We are very happy here in Cameroon. The excitement for winning the 10th title and also qualifying for the Olympics 2024. It's a really great moment for Kenya for getting this title from the OC Cameroon. After winning, we worked very hard for it. As you can see, we have expertise from Brazil. We have empowerment program, which we have run for the last 4 months before coming to this competition.
The best player of the competition is Sharon Chepchuma, still from Kenya. Sharon dedicates her trophy to the many fans in her home country and across Africa.
I'm so proud of my teammates, and I'm also proud of myself. Second time to be the MVP. It's not easy, but the support that I've been getting from my teammates, it has been massive, and I really appreciate it. So I'm saying I will keep on working hard, I'll keep on fighting, and I'll keep on encouraging African players, not only in Kenya, but all African players to work hard and have that determination so that they can achieve whatever they want in life. As an African girl, I believe that this time round in the world, they will respect Africa because we got good talent and we are ready to conquer it and we are ready to show them that Africa has good talent.
The 2023 finalists, Kenya and Egypt, were among favorites. The two teams were the most dominant forces in the tournament, with Kenya winning all of their matches and Egypt losing only one before losing again in the finals. Egypt striker Sabine Hassan acknowledges they met a more determined Kenya.
We study this team, Kenya, a lot. They play yesterday very well. Kenya is a very, very, very good team. Thank you.
Kenya therefore lifts gold and Egypt silver. Defending champions and consecutive 3-time winners Cameroon defeated Rwanda by 3-1 to win bronze at the championship. Peter Nonnenberge, Cameroon's head coach, says his team is still very young, but promising.
We have to be realistic. A lot of experienced players, they stopped playing for this team, and to change and bring new players on the level what had before, this needs time and work. In 2 years we can win if we get enough time to work. And when you see like Kenya, they were all year long more or less together working, paid by FIVB to travel all around the world and playing all around the world and tournaments. If we get enough budget simply like that to work, for sure we can be on the same level like that, maybe better.
But Kenya's coach Paul Bitok says Cameroon did not make use of some of its players who are among the top in the continent. Bitok says such players are needed for Cameroon to do well in the 2025 FIVB Volleyball Women's World Championship.
To build a player like Moma and Chumba, it takes more than 4 years to have such players. And I really request the nation of Cameroon, Ministry of Sports, to sit down and bring us Moma. We want to represent World Championship when we have Moma in the team. We don't want to go as only Kenya. We want to represent as Africa, and we want to have the best representation.
Many people here in Yaoundé agree that the Cameroonian Volleyball Federation did a good job of beautifully organizing the competition. The Central African States officials applaud fans who massively participated at the event.
Le Cameroun adhère à cette vision chère aux Nations Unies qui veut le sport comme un aliment.
Cameroon's Sports Minister Narcisse Mwalekambi says Cameroon gave in its best to organize the 2023 Women's African Volleyball Championship because the Central African State adheres to the United Nations ideology of sports as an instrument for development, peace, living together, and mutual understanding between states, people, and communities all over the world.
Différents horizons de différentes nationalités, de différentes cultures.
Morocco, Rwanda, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, Lesotho, Mali, and Uganda return home as nations that have never won the championship. Egypt, Tunisia, and Cameroon have the record of 3 times winners, and the continent's giants Kenya carry the 10th Women's African Volleyball Top Trophy in Yaoundé. Kenya will represent Africa at the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris before joining Cameroon and Egypt as the continent's ambassadors to the 2025 FIVB Volleyball Women's World Championship, contested by the Sino Women's National Teams of the members of the Fédération Internationale de Volleyball, which Hong Kong, Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam have expressed interest to host. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Moki Edwin Kinzuka in Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Serving it over to tennis, Craig Gabriel has an update for us on the Men's Davis Cup from Malaga, Spain.
The semi-final lineup is now set for the Davis Cup. Australia, finalist last year, will take on England in its most successful Davis Cup run ever. And Italy, with world number 4, Jannik Sinner, will face Serbia with world number 1, Novak Djokovic. Serbia was the only nation to secure their semi-final place by winning the 2 singles matches and taking an unassailable advantage. Miroslav Krsmanovic got things rolling when he beat Britain's Jack Draper 7-6, 7-6. Draper is still very inexperienced at this level, and he admitted that there's a lot to learn, while Krsmanovic said winning a match like that is a confidence booster after losing quite a few of those this year. Djokovic then came out and accounted for Cam Norrie 6-4, 6-4. That was Djokovic's 21st consecutive singles win in Davis Cup, and incredibly, he has not lost a Davis Cup singles match since the semis in 2011.
Pretty much anybody who is part of the Davis Cup here really, you know, says the same thing. It's absolute honor and privilege to be representing the country, to wear the flag on your shirt when you're out on the court. It's more responsibility as well. When I look at the bench, you know, normally no one is seated there, but my captain is seated there, and who's obviously my childhood friend as well. We won Davis Cup together back in 2010, and we said that, you know, a few days ago how much that victory really contributed to our individual success in our career. So we really enjoy playing for our country. There's a great team spirit. We feel we have a good chance and good shot at the title. Obviously, you know, semifinals, playing very strong nation. And I think the fact that I had the unbeaten run since 2011 in a way showcases my dedication and my really approach to playing for my country. You know, I really take it seriously and try to always deliver my best game. And the more you win, you know, the more you want to keep the streak going. So, yeah, hopefully I can keep it going on Saturday as well.
Earlier on, Italy reached the semis by beating the Netherlands 2-1. The Dutch won the first match when Botek van der Zandschulp, a former US Open quarterfinalist, beat Matteo Arnaldi, who was playing in just his third Davis Cup singles, 6-7, 6-3, 7-6. It was up to Jannik Sinner to level the tie, and he did against Talon Griekspoor. The first set was tight. Sinner said it took him a bit of time to get used to the rhythm, but when he did, it was clear sailing for the red-haired Italian, 7-6, 6-1. Sinner truly is the real deal and is a future world number one.
I think pressure is a privilege to have. You know, it's there are not so many players who have this privilege. Davis Cup pressure is different because it's, you know, that you have a big runs responsibility to show because you don't have many chances. So it's... It is a privilege.
So it was the doubles to decide that tie. Italian captain Filippo Volandri went with Sinner and Lorenzo Sonego, while the Dutch captain Paul Hahus, a former world number one doubles champion, went with Griekspoor and doubles specialist Wesley Kulhoff. And it was the two Italians who don't play much doubles that won. This was the first time they'd played Davis Cup doubles together. 6-3, 6-4 was the score. To day four, and the first semi-final tie will be played, and that's Australia against Finland. When Australia beat Czechia and reached the semis, that was the 200th Davis Cup tie Australia had won. And they're just the second nation, the other being the United States, who never made the final series, to win 200 or more ties. And with that experience, the Aussies are favoured against the Finns, who have never been so deep in the Davis Cup competition before. Australia will be led by Alex Dimonor, and they're trying to reach the final for the second consecutive year, having last won the Davis Cup in 2003. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Malaga.
Lastly, we have Samson O'Malley with a roundup of all African sports. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you too, Mark Bill. We begin the wrap of Africa's sport highlight with Africa's premier club football competition, the CAF Champions League. The league makes a return this week as the group stages of the 2023-2024 edition of the competition officially gets underway across the continent this Friday. Following an intense preliminary round that saw some interesting outcomes and upsets, it is now down to the 16 clubs that have been grouped into the four groups of four to resume their continent quest for glory. The action officially gets underway in Egypt on Friday, the 24th of November, when Pyramids welcomes five-time champions TP Mazembe, who are itching for continental success after last lifting the Champions League trophy in 2015. In another exciting encounter up north, Al Hockley plays host to Ghanaian outfit Medema in Cairo as the competition's record holders look to defend their title. But Musa Baba Madiema, captain, says his Ghanaian side will give a good account of themselves when they go up against the champions.
We are very well prepared from day one. Like, we started from Rainbow Stars. Yeah, we did what we could do. We got through that stage. We went to Horoya. From that two games, we've got some experience. So moving forward to this game, that experience is going to guide us to do well in Egypt. Talking about Champions League, nobody's no Medema there, but we are going to give a good account on ourselves there.
In Tanzania, Simba AC welcome Ivorian giant ASEC Mimosa in a Group B encounter that promises fireworks on the eastern part of the continent on Saturday afternoon. Later that evening, a Tunisian duel will see ES Tunis playing host to ES Sahel in Tunis, with both sides looking at bringing the trophy back to Tunisia after ES Tunis last did in 2019. Last season's runners-up Wydad AC will be looking to quickly erase their African Football League disappointment when they welcome the high in confidence Joanne Galaxy on Saturday evening, while Mamelodi Sundowns, fresh from their AFL triumph, will face Mauritania's Nouadhibou on Sunday afternoon. Same with football news, but this time around, women football. Newly appointed Crested Cranes of Ugandan coach Cheryl Boetes has held her first training session with the senior women's national team ahead of their international build-up games against Morocco next month. Coach Boetes, who was handed a three-year contract, said her main objective is to make sure that the Crested Cranes becomes one of the most competitive women national football teams in Africa. Boetes' first training session mainly focused on ball possession skills.
For me, it would be if we can just play a bit more a game that we, a football the Ugandans would love to watch, you know. Now I see we're watching, the ball is going, I don't want us to watch that game, you know. I want us to really bring more possession, a bit more flair. We have players here that has flair, but we've got to use them in certain position, and I believe they, even with the flair, helps to keep the possession, you know.
The South African tactician has named a provisional squad of 31 players to face Morocco in two international friendly matches, with the first game scheduled for Friday, the 1st of December 2023 in Casablanca, and the second on Tuesday, the 5th of December 2023 in Rabat.
We're playing against the World Cup champion coach, Volder. He's been appointed. So I'm expecting a Spanish flair coming this way. So we're trying everything. Yes, we have a few days, but I'm looking that it will be positive.
And now to the FIFA 2026 World Cup qualifying matches, where two ugly performances have mirrored the Super Eagles of Nigeria's start to their ambition to play at the 2026 World Cup finals. The three-time African champions have 2 points from a possible six and are third on the table behind Rwanda and South Africa. The two draws with Lesotho and Zimbabwe has elicited criticism from football fans in Nigeria. Immediate past president of the Nigerian Football Federation and member of the FIFA Executive Council says Nigeria cannot afford to qualify for USA 2026, having missed out at the Qatar 2022 World Cup.
Important that we qualify, because some of our finest moments in football took place in the US, and Super Eagles cannot afford not to be in the US. In 1994, Super Eagles, within a whisker, but for that goal scored by Roberto Baggio, would have gone to the semi-finals, quarter-finals, and possibly won that event. Nigeria was ranked number 4. That feat was achieved in the U.S. In 1996, we won the Olympic gold medal. The rest is history.
In athletics, a refugee athlete on an IOC scholarship to train for the Paris Olympics has been provisionally suspended in the doping case. The Athletics Integrity Unit said Faoud Idba Fidel, who is originally from Morocco, was sent a notice of allegation after testing positive for the banned blood-boosting hormone EPO in October. The 35-year-old runner is provisionally banned from competing while the case is prosecuted just 8 months ahead of the 2024 Summer Games in France, where he now lives. The International Olympic Committee said last December, Idba Fadel was among more than 50 refugee athletes getting financial help in their host countries to prepare for Paris. Staying with athletics, Africa 100 meters record holder Ferdinand Omanyala has hinted at adopting a new tactical approach even as he eyes a historic Olympic gold medal at the 2024 Paris Olympics. The Kenyan said he intends to reduce the number of races he will be running this season, adding that he will not be keen on scorching the Kenyan tracks as frequently as he did last season. The Commonwealth champion said he had already rolled out an effective training regime that will see him turn around his fortunes from the preceding season.
So next year won't see a lot of me, especially in Kenya. We are doing very little races in Kenya. At most, it'll be three. So it will be most looking at the Diamond League, where the competition is. That's where the iron sharpens iron.
No fewer than 128 players are set to slug it out for honors in the Abuja squash competition scheduled for November 27th to December the 2nd. Boye Oyerinde, president of the Nigerian Squash Federation, said that the week-long competition will see a pool of 64 players in both the female and male categories compete for prizes. A squash competition is expected to serve off at the Moshood Abiola National Stadium in Abuja, Nigeria.
And that's a wrap for the Friday, November 24th edition of the show. Hope you all have a great day and great weekend. I'm Mukbil Yabaro in Washington, in for Sonny Young. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.